Welcome back to the Black Doctor Speak podcast. Here's part two of our interview with Dr. Ron K. Bailey on the stigmas surrounding youth mental health.
I know the complexity of the issue of psychiatric problems or psychological problems or stress-related problems in adolescence is fairly complex. What are some of the things where a parent can separate? This is just normal adolescent behavior from something that's more pathological.
Well, it's a great point. I think that that's always our issue because since we don't have blood tests or urine tests in psychiatry to give us a very specific and a very direct answer, we spend a lot of time talking and trying to talk about how do you assess, how do you diagnose, how do you determine what's wrong for. The three big things that I often, you know, will share with families are first and foremost, I like to look for whether a person is functioning in a way that others in their immediate environment, their parents and their school teachers, people who matter to them, think are normal. So behavior that others may engage in, or you may see on television or radio, but if your own culture and your own community sees it as abnormal, very often that could be a red flag. I think a second issue is whether or not you're actually being sanctioned in a negative way by institutions, I think, that create some degree of governance. You know, if you're being arrested, if you're having to go to the hospital, if you're, you know, losing your job, if you're having conflict with your family and they're putting you out of the house, those kind of big issues, big things that I think create some degree of conflict in institutions of your life clearly raise substantive red flags and are problematic. And the third thing I'd often say is that sometimes rather than outward behavior, aggression and agitation or fighting or yelling or screaming or using curse language, sometimes the person turns inward. We describe suicide as depression, you know, turn inward. So the reality is sometimes the person gets very quiet. They get isolated. They kind of move away. And persons who are around them, who know them and who know how what their normal behavior is like, how much they talk or active or engage, what they enjoy doing, going bowling on Tuesday nights or church on Sunday, for example, when a person doesn't have any enjoyment in those type of things anymore, we call it anhedonia. That could be a very big sign that depression is on the way.
And then when you start to see your children kind of slipping into darkness, what are some of the tools that a parent can use to try to either neutralize it, stabilize it, or get it into a better situation?
Well, I clearly think that when we advise parents as best we can, and I know it's probably an overused axiom, but you must talk with your kids and listen to your kids. And most importantly, you must hear what your kids are thinking and feeling. And I think as difficult as that may be to try and to pursue, it's just that important. So over talking them or being angry aloud or being punitive in our approach may not really work. Thinking that if we ignore an issue, it'll just go away. If we just don't talk about it or don't think about it, may not also be, the best strategy kind of going forward. We also believe that teenagers and young persons want to talk to you, want to communicate with you as their parent, but just very often don't know how for any number of reasons, fear and embarrassment, what somebody else may have said, maybe play a large role. They may have a misinformation. They may think that if they tell you something, it's going to hurt you or be more problematic than what it'll do for them. And you as a parent just wants to know what's going on with them so you can kind of help them. So often there's a remarkable amount of disconnectedness in families between adults and their teenage offspring that we in psychiatry try as best we can to bridge that gap and enhance better communication so you can help your children if they're having a problem.
You know, with the complexity of the whole issue of psychological and psychiatric problems in adolescent youth, it's very difficult, I think, for parents to appreciate what's normal adolescent behavior and what's abnormal adolescent behavior. What are some of the signs that a parent can look to say maybe this is going in the wrong direction?
Well, I think clearly parents should look at if a child is internally inconsistent in their behaviors, or when a child doesn't want you to kind of know what they're doing. It's one thing to kind of close the door and want some privacy. It's another to never really want your parent to see you or be around you in a time when they may have some degree of vulnerability and exposure. I think parents should also work as best they can to find the things that their child previously liked and find those positive times. A child may become an adolescent. They may have different friends, different activities, but they may still like going to get ice cream with their parent once a blue moon, once a week or once a month, what have you. And that's your quiet time. That's your special time. When it's you and your adolescent can enjoy some basic time, some quiet time, can discuss some things, some personal issues that you may want to discuss, I think, in private. If you lose all of that, I used the word being disconnected earlier, and you see a child, you know, resigning to their own, being more isolated, maybe beginning to have functional problems in life, I mentioned earlier, with grades at school or losing this or not having friends or having a different set of friends, people that may be very different than the way your child previously acted or behaved. If your child seems to be in the one down position, when it's always taking orders from others or being a follower, not really living the life that they've always really espoused themselves to really be, I think a parent should intervene and try to find your way best to get that child a chance to get their feet back on firm ground, on solid footing, so they can let their own emotions and their own personality grow and I think come to the forefront in life. Parents have a remarkable responsibility to help teenagers out of bad times. And teenagers will get into a bad time period periodically throughout their teenage lives.
You know, you too often though, parents, in my experience, when the sign is a particular antagonism with a system, either the school, jail, or just even some strange behavior between colleagues and friends, parents tend to ignore that more often than not. But that's a pretty important sign, isn't it?
I think so. I think clearly you're right. Parents and relatives and adult friends will easily want to ignore that aberrant behavior, that bad behavior, that very distant or different behavior, because we want to believe the best in people. We want to remember the best about individuals. Remember when our son John or our nephew Henry or our, you know, daughter Mary was at her best or at his best and doing well and thinking and functioning and not impaired with other people's ideas or adverse substances or things of that nature. So we very often try to put blinders on and maybe involuntarily ignore clear warning signs something is wrong with our child. And if the child is having a hard way to go and things are tougher for them than they used to be, the child really can't find their footing and can't find any degree of solid activity that actually supports their own personality and allows for their own individual emotional and psychological growth. I think parents should be astutely aware of that. We should not be quiet about it. We should not be bashful or afraid to intervene. We also should say something if we think something and give a child a chance to describe for us what's kind of going on in their lives. I think all too often the experience is we wait, then there's a bad event, and then you're in the emergency room because something happened, pro or con, and then there's a discussion about what you were seeing behaviorally well before the bad event happened led to the emergency room. I'm always saying to parents, think about what could be your worst day, worst phone call to get about your child and try to intervene earlier. Parents' role is to prevent those really bad things from happening to our children in the first place.
You know, this is one of the first in our series, our Adolescent Mental Health Initiative. How are we going to normalize diagnosis and management of adolescents? And what do you suggest we start to think about as interested people in our society to deal with these issues?
Well, I think we should think about a few things. I mentioned, you know, media earlier. I'm not the kind of psychiatrist that's normally blaming the media, so to speak, although clearly it goes without saying that if your child or your adolescent offspring is receiving more external outside information from other individuals and other parties and other settings than they're getting from their parents at home, by definition, that puts the parent in a difficult position and one that's actually less influential of your own child than you would like. So if you see differing behaviors by that child, it's not surprising because the information that we're putting into them may vary tremendously. I think I've read in the past that a child in America, by the time they finish high school or going off the age, you know, 20 years old practically, they've seen 200,000 acts of violence on television. Cars wrecking and bombs exploding and guns shooting and people fighting, fisticuffs. It's just too much. So not surprising that we'd have a more violent society with more externalized violence now than perhaps so many decades ago, if not a century ago, because so many individuals are exposed to so much violence, gratuitous violence, during these very impressionable years of their lives. I think another issue though is very often when we do intervene, our inventions probably don't last long enough. Or one of my main pet peeves as a psychiatrist is we need more sustainability in psychiatric interventions. Somebody will come to me for therapy, and I always said that the second visit is the most important, because at least they kind of came back after seeing me the first time. And I'm lucky if I can get 4 to 6 visits to just handle the immediate issue of what talk therapy can address. But the textbook has always said that if you get a full episode of clinical depression, for example, and I'm seeing you for an hour once a week, it's probably more like 16 to 20 visits, which could take 4 to 6 months to address, to really get to the root cause of many of the problems that talk therapy, psychological therapy could actually help with. At that point, you may figure out what the problem may be, and then maybe move that person to a different type setting, maybe even a group therapy going forward. There's a lot we can do with therapy. As a psychiatrist, I think that I've seen it work a lot in my life, so I like to say to individuals who have not had that experience, this can work. And if your child needs it, I encourage you strongly to consider it as a potentially effective intervention for the psychological problems that many adolescents may be struggling with.
Well, Dr. Bailey, thank you for taking the time to give us our initial interview. You, as a symbolic head of this initiative, can play a very important role in clarifying some of the things that we have difficulty understanding. I think this problem of adolescent mental health is a big one with many, many facets, and it's going to take a village, really, to kind of get our youth kind of back into some kind of circumstance where they may not be less stressed, but they may have more opportunities for effective treatment and management once they overcome the stigma of adolescent mental health.
I fully agree. I think that we can do a lot. We can do more. No child is too impaired for us to try to create interventional strategies that are likely to work. Again, my experience as a psychiatrist has been, I've seen many individuals turn the corner and get better and stop engaging in behaviors that are unwarranted and disfavored by families and friends, and move in a more effective, more positive direction. That's a positive story that I think we have to tell families and communities. People need to know that it does exist. It may not be easy to find. Getting a culturally competent provider, I think, very often is key. They may not have to be of the exact same gender and race and age and ethnicity and all of that, although those demographics very often can help. But they have to be somebody who wants to understand you or your child and who puts the effort in to make sure that their understanding is commensurate or consistent with what your child really needs, and then has to have sustainability. We have to work with them long enough to really make it work. Have to develop a trust, we call it a therapeutic alliance. Have to then bridge that therapeutic alliance and some other activities where the child will believe that what you're recommending is likely to work for them. Those things very often take time. It takes a fair amount of time to develop psychological problems in adolescent. It's likely to take a fair amount of time, more than just 1 or 2 conversations, to try to fix it.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today, the first of many conversations we'll have over various facets of adolescent mental health issues.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Black Doctor Speak podcast. We hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Ron K. Bailey. The Black Doctor Speak podcast is presented by the African American Wellness Project. For more information, follow African American Wellness Project on Instagram or visit our website at aawellnessproject.org.